Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, August 9th, 2023. Glad to have you along with us.
Hump Day!
There it is. Little Geico Campbell. Can't go wrong with that. Appreciate you being with us. What a first hour. Stuart Stevens from the Lincoln Project. Appreciate him filling in for Trygve Olsen, who is on a well-deserved vacation with his family this week. But Mr. Zommers is one of those guys you like to listen to and get some knowledge from.
Absolutely. It's something that, like, you and Luke were talking about over the break. All you got to do is you put the quarter in and you're in for a treat.
Yeah. And one of the cool things about Stuart is that here's a guy, he says it flat out. Look, if you want to know who is responsible, look at me. He takes responsibility for having helped elect several of these Republicans over the years and get us to where we're at.
And then much like other people from the Lincoln Project and other campaign people that Todd's talked to, they know how it works, so they have really good answers for your questions.
Yeah, I appreciate him taking those questions as well. And I think it's fascinating to hear one of the top Republican, former Republican operatives now say, you know what? There's only one party in America, one major party that's pro-democracy, and that's the Democratic Party of America. Pretty telling for a guy who is on the inside more than anyone else. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, this half hour, we have Matt Solomon. He is a cracked.com comedy beat writer. He is going to be in, lightening things up a little bit, talking about 25 of the best comics, according to Patton Oswalt and also other beloved comics, and also talking about a new column he wrote called The 25 Greatest Rant Comics of All Time. Matt Solomon, great guy, also an author with our very own Chris Pauls. We'll be talking to Matt Solomon at the bottom of the hour. Want to get to a couple of questions that we didn't have time to get to Stuart. One was on our new StreamYard stream on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm sorry, there's so much going on, we didn't quite get to it. Tony put up a great question, says, great conversation with Stuart. We appreciate that. It was all him. He says, is he worried, Stuart Stevens, that is, that Trump would not accept the election results of the primary if he loses? And I know that Will and Luke were talking about this on Town Call prior to us coming on the air this afternoon. You can hear Town Call every afternoon from 12:15 till 1. I didn't get a chance to ask Stuart, but I'll just give you my brief synopsis on it. A, I don't think there's any scenario in which Trump isn't the Republican nominee in 2024. I think it's baked. I mean, you could even have the guy in jail if it went so far to that. And I think he'll still be the Republican nominee. But let's just say for whatever reason that DeSantis or somebody else can break through, or, you know, my gut tells me he'd probably just go to do a independent run and try to screw over the Republican Party and help elect Biden. That's my sense. But sorry we didn't get to that during the show, but we will ask Stuart next time he is on. Also had a call or a text in saying that, okay, if the Democratic progressive, let's see. Okay, I'm, try that again, Todd. Can you read it, Aaron? My light's
I'm okay oh. If it goes in the way of the Democrats or the progressives to just end the Republican Party because the entire thing is corrupt. That's what the text is.
Yeah, and I think other people, Rick Wilson, others, Lincoln Project, have said metaphorically, keyword metaphorically, that the current iteration of the Republican Party, which is essentially Trumpism, needs to be burned down and start over. Another person asked, I think a little bit earlier, wanted to hear from Stuart on what if, did he think that the Democrats, i.e. Hillary, could have done better in 2016, as in have her stump in Wisconsin, that from Jeff in Shorewood. And yeah, I know that Stuart and Rick Wilson, others have been on the record saying absolutely, that it wasn't just the fact that Trump kind of bamboozled people, it was the fact that the Democrats and Hillary messed up in not spending more places and more time in places like Wisconsin. So great calls, great texts as well. Let's go. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about this article of Wisconsin Republicans trying to go after more votes in Wisconsin. I want to hear from you. Do you think that college kids care about crime and inflation? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. But first of all, let's go back to the phone lines here down in Racine. Edward in Racine, thanks for listening and calling in. What say you?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
My question is, to say that there's only one Democratic Party with a little D seems to really, you know, miss many of the points, and I really don't quite understand that point of view. It seems, to be candid, that both parties have major deficits in terms of representing people and in terms of a more candid election process and electioneering. And I don't understand when you look at the last two campaigns, the lawlessness, the outcomes of excess liberalization, in terms
sure.
of
enforcement. Sure. Let me just, Edward, we got about 30 seconds left. I'll make sure I get an answer in for you. I appreciate the call. I would say this, that the 2020 election has been proven by former Trump appointees as well as the court system to be free, fair, and just. Donald Trump lost the election. Joe Biden won the election. That is not debatable. And the fact that Republicans won't acknowledge that several proves the point. Back with more calls after this. Don't go away. This is the Tom Walz Show on the Civic Media Ready Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tom Walz Show across the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 15 past the hour of 2 o'clock. Glad to have you along. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll welcome in Matt Solomon from Crack.com, talking about some comedians, 25 top comedians, according to Patton Oswalt and others. Also talking about rage comedians as well. So I'll lighten things up a little bit in the last half hour of the show. Again, apologize for my voice, still getting over a little laryngitis or something, but the show must go on, and we welcome you back into the show. Great article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Tyler Katzenberger. Headline, Wisconsin Republicans seek inroads with youth voters ahead of first 2024 presidential debate. It is kind of a profile on a guy I've known a long time. You've heard me talk about him. Brian Schimming, who grew up basically around the college campus here in Madison, UW-Madison. I've known the guy for over 30 years. And let me make clear, this is not personal at all. To have a beverage, and Brian likes a good Diet Coke. To have a Diet Coke with Brian or just to sit and chat with him, a delightful person. I have nothing bad to say about the guy personally at all. And much like me, he is a couple, 3 years older, I think, than me. But he came up in the Republican Party kind of the same way, kind of more of a mainstream Republican. And for whatever his personal reasons are, he has decided to stay with the party rather than myself, which left it, and is now the chairman of the state Republican Party. And there's this profile today in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And look, I give Schimming credit. He's saying he wants to target and go after more college students' votes in Wisconsin, because in this last election for Supreme Court justice, one of the things that helped Janet Protasiewicz win was the big turnout in college campuses across Wisconsin. And Schimming is saying, and others here in this article, that Republicans want to go with the issue of crime and inflation to motivate 18 to 25-year-olds to the polls. Now, I'm 53. But I talk to a lot of college folks, college age, have a couple of godsons that age. I mean, I shared on the air a couple months ago I moved, and my movers were all in their early 20s, three guys, three dudes. And I asked them what they thought the top issue was motivating them to vote right now. And all three of these 20-something-year-old men said women's reproductive rights. Also mentioned the environment. Nobody said anything about crime and inflation. Do you think that crime and inflation is going to motivate young people to get out and vote? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789 would welcome your calls. Let's stay here in Dane County, go down to Stoughton, and CJ in Stoughton, welcome. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Todd. I actually was on hold to ask Stuart a question for quite a while. I never got a chance to. But what I would have asked him, if in his book he had a chapter about who paid for and designed and implemented Crossfire Hurricane, and if he had a chapter in there about the Durham report, but I didn't get the chance. But as far as your question goes, the Democrats have done a great job monopolizing the love of abortion. Because, like Lindsey Graham said, until the Republicans come to a unified stance on it and commit to that, they're going to have a difficult time, because I just hope that, like Chuck Schumer had a vote on the Senate floor, that the Democrats don't continue to allow abortion to go up till the day before a baby's born, because that's what Chuck Schumer and the Democrats voted on. No restrictions all the way up till the day before a baby's born. And that's sad.
I think that, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds, they have a different line of thinking in terms of what's important to them. I don't know too many college kids that are thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I think I'm going to get mugged on the way home, and I'm going to vote and go to the— what motivates me to go to the polls is crime. I think it's women's reproductive rights. I think it's the environment. I think it's student loan debt. I think those are things that are very real in their world. Not to say that other things aren't important, but if you want to— what motivates people right now to go to the polls at that age, it's those issues. And so I just think that Republicans have a hard time trying to use crime and inflation to motivate students to the polls. But we appreciate your call, CJ. Always a pleasure.
I agree.
Let's go to Dave in Sussex. Dave, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. A couple points, if I may. First, yeah, to address the question on hand about the youngsters of our country, you're totally right, and it's highly unfortunate. One of the reasons, I believe, is because a lot of these kids spend so much time— they don't have any real world experience yet. They spend time with mom and dad. Mom and dad are paying the bills, they're paying their college, they're living in the basement until they're 25, 26 years old. They don't know what it's like to get a job and spend more money on groceries and more money on gas. It's highly unfortunate. My 18-year-old son has been working and spending his own money. He understands. The parents need to step up and teach these kids the importance of money and what's going on in this country is wrong. So that's the first point. The second point is, you made a comment about the election. It wasn't stolen because Joe Biden's in the White House. Well, Joe Biden's in the White House. He won the election, but you cannot dispute the fact there was too many irregularities in the election for it to be fair. There was too much ballot harvesting. There was a thing going on in a park in Madison. It was illegal. They had people filling out ballots.
I just want to ask you a question. Sure. I just want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question. Well, I'll give him a chance here. Dave, I just want to hear from you. Are you saying that you disagree with Paul Ryan, the former Speaker of the House, Republican of Wisconsin, that said the 2020 election was fair and just? And also, do you also disagree with former Vice President Mike Pence, who is on Face the Nation this weekend, and he said directly that the election was fair, and he believed that they lost the election? Are you saying that you disagree with Paul Ryan and Mike Pence? Go ahead. Hello, Dave. Apparently, Dave didn't want to answer the question. Okay, very good. I mean, these are pretty basic questions, but if people don't want to ask them then, or answer them, then that's fine. See, this is the point, is that people want to rant on the Republican side, on the MAGA side, about all this and this all this crap about, you know, all their election stuffing ballot boxes in the park in Madison. That's just bunk. But people are get put this into their head. They think it's true. And then you ask them directly, because Paul Ryan and now Mike Pence have said that the election was fair and free in 2020, and still these people don't even believe that.
And to share another thought, Mike from Sheboygan called in, and he wanted to make sure that there was one thing that CJ touched on that Mike wanted to make sure we addressed, and that was the abortion up until the day of birth, or day before, which is not a thing.
Right.
It's like, just not people a thing. Don't do that. Because if you're going to get an abortion, you don't just go and sign up and you're like, okay, give me one abortion, please. And they're like, all right, here you go. Sure thing.
Right.
Like, the doctor has to look into it and see if it's appropriate for the situation. And if your baby is in the third trimester, they're going to be like, no,
right.
You can't do that.
Again, it's a favorite line. Great point from the caller. Thank you, Mr. Zombers, for passing that along. It's just stuff to get people ginned up. That's just, again, complete bunk. Let's go to Ron in Milwaukee. Appreciate you holding it. Ron in Milwaukee. What say you?
Hi, how you doing? I got a frog in my throat today, too.
All right, I'm sorry for the voice, but thanks for listening. Go ahead.
Because, you know, I can't even imagine them going out to recruit college students to vote for them when they're the party that cuts, you know, student aid help, that tries to restrict their ability to vote easily on campus, because that's their working address, or in the local residence where they live near the campus, and all these other things that have been taken for granted by students for years. And then, you know, Republican candidates in the meanwhile who are proposing to raise the voting age to 25 for some unconscionable reason. You know, that's not even getting to the bigger issue stuff like environment and
right.
Women's rights and so forth. But they're barking up the wrong tree here. They gotta deliver first, and then they can go to these and say, look what we did for you, not look how bad. And then the other thing, by the way, I'm stepping on my own line here, but the other thing is, right, the GOP and movement conservatism have spent years warning young people and college students in particular that you're going to get so rolled and screwed by Social Security, because it's going to be it's going to be all on your backs when the boomers all retired. And, you know, the scare tactics to get them to get rid of Social Security, which is the last thing that anybody in this country really, really wants if they think about it, because it's income security when you retire. And finally, absolutely, I agree with everything you said, Todd, about what really matters to students. And one thing that matters to students is, yes, the economy matters to students, but students wouldn't be having to live at home with their parents and take jobs that put them into further poverty if we had a fair and just economic system and structure where businesses were obliged to be truly competitive, pay competitive wages, help students in their learning skills, and not try to create the, you know, private technical colleges that are really just house training facilities.
Ron, great call. Really, really appreciate you. I just run low on time. Ron, I love everything about that call. And you're so right about the point that Republicans, many now, want to raise the voting age, like Vivek Ramaswamy and Scott Walker, who's tried to walk it back, trying to raise the voting age to deny college age people to vote. Great call, Ron. Thank you so much. Want to go quickly and get her in. Carol in Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you listening in Fairfield, Illinois. Carol, go ahead.
I called in. You asked about what the college students might care about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hadn't heard it suggested. So, and I'm not suggesting that college students are just looking to party or anything, but the marijuana laws in Wisconsin are considered pretty archaic, I think. And one college student might want to avoid getting entrapped by the government by enjoying themselves on a weekend sometime, you know?
Yeah, I think that
voting to make recreational marijuana legal there, since
right.
it really ought to be everywhere. I think we should be able to grow. I think we should all be able to grow. Anyone who's an adult anyway, should be able to grow for potential use, potential sleep help, potential mood help.
Carol, I'm running low on time. I apologize. Got to go on a break here, but I love you listening down in Illinois. I think you're right. I think that is maybe more of a fringe issue, but I think it's an important one for younger people, the legalization of marijuana. I still think that it's women's right for abortion and also environment driving most young people. Back after this. And having fun doing it along the way. That's the Tom Wall Show. Welcome back to the show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And it's now 2:33 on the time and temperature sign. Glad to have you along with us on a Wednesday. Get to the, well, it's all fun, but the lighter side of the show, which always great to have someone come in and give us another viewpoint. We welcome back to the program Matt Solomon, that is, pardon me for butchering the name. He is a comedic writer for crack.com, and also a man of many talents, including an author, along with our mutual friend Chris Pauls, has written several books as well. We welcome you back. Matt, thanks for joining us. Even though my voice is out of sorts, yours sounds absolutely fine.
Why, thank you, Todd. That for the radio.
That was fantastic. Our first guest, Stuart Stevens, said you had kind of have that Barry White voice going on. Mm. You know, I said if I only had an ounce of his talent, right?
I can't quite pull off Barry White.
Well, it's great to have you back on. Tell us what's new at Cracked. What's popping, and what you've been working on.
There's been a couple of bigger stories that I've been working on over the past month or so. And one was I talked to a number of comics mm-hmm. about the whole idea of what it means to be a comics comic. And then they helped me put together a list of the 25 greatest comics of all time.
I've gone through this a little bit. Some of these people I know very, very well. There's a handful that I've never heard of before. So I found it fascinating. Explain to folks that maybe haven't followed comedy or don't follow it regularly, the phrase or the term, what does comics mean?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was really fascinating to me while putting this story together was almost every comedian I talked to about, tell me what comic means to you. They all had slightly different definitions of the mm-hmm. term. I talked to four comedians for this, Patton Oswalt, yeah. Rachel Feinstein, Andy Kindler, and Jackie Cation. And I'll give you a few different definitions. Yeah. One is, and this is the one that I came into the story with, it's the comedian that gets on stage and then all of the other comics who might be milling around, they might have already gone on, they might be going on later in the night, everybody stops what they're doing mm-hmm. to watch what's going to happen on stage. It might be because the person's coming up has a reputation for being brilliant. It might be because that comedian has a reputation for being self-destructive on stage. There's all kinds of reasons why the comedians might stop. I have Larry David is on this list from Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld. And when Larry David was a stand-up comic, he was notorious for if things weren't going quite his way, he might just start laying into the audience. He might start throwing things. He might just walk off after being on stage for 3 minutes. But he was also, you know, one of the reasons that comedians loved him was because he told jokes that may not have been the audience's cup of tea, but they were so idiosyncratic and coming from such a unique point of view that the comics would stop to, you know, to listen to him for his comedy, but also because he might self-destruct. So
Is there a common thread, Matt, in these people that were named as comic? Is it that they have a higher bar of comedy that you have to kind of be smart in order to enjoy it? Is that a common thread or not so much?
Not necessarily, although I think if you were to go through this list of 25, and I purposely tried to come up with a mix of people that would be instantly recognizable and some people that people might want to seek out on YouTube or whatever and find their work. I do think they tend to be, smarter than your average comedian. They're not the guys that are going up there and say, hey, what's the deal with airplane food? Or, what part of the chicken is the McNugget anyway? You're not going to hear that kind of hacky joke from comics. They often are people that are kind of deconstructing the form while they're doing it. They're making, maybe sly jokes about being a comedian while they're doing comedy. So I think that really appeals to other comedians because there's a little inside humor for them. But I think it also appeals to comedy fans who kind of feel like, oh, I get that. One thing that was interesting to me in talking to all of these, every one of them said that they're all comedians that are considered comics, and they're, to a person, they weren't sure whether that designation was an insult or a compliment.
I like that.
And all of them, all of them take it as a compliment. Basically, sure. It means other comedians really think you're a great comedian. If you're a comedian's comedian, it means that you are considered one of the best. It can also mean that it's a comic that not everyone gets. It can mean if a club owner calls you a comedian's comedian, it might mean you're a comedian that's not helping me sell beer.
Right.
Because you're just, that's great that you're doing this. Yeah, it's great you're doing this really cerebral, inside baseball comedy that your buddies are all enjoying in the back of the room. But the people who are buying drinks, they're not digging it. They're not laughing. So it can also, so it can mean also somebody who everyone recognizes, oh, that guy's a genius. But for whatever reason, that person hasn't caught on with the greater public. They're not getting cast in that sitcom lead. They're not getting cast in the movie. They're not getting the Netflix special.
Right. Two of the people on the list here of these comics, Norm Macdonald and David Letterman, two people that are very well known to I would say most listeners. But yep. Norm Macdonald, or as Letterman likes to say, Norm Macdonald. Norm Macdonald, any time that he was on Letterman, just to see the way he cracked Letterman up was half the fun of it for me, because Norm Macdonald's one of those, as you said, cerebral people who would just, see things differently and say things you wouldn't hear anywhere else. And I think that just genuinely got to Letterman every single time.
I mean, that's a great way to look at who's a comedian's comedian. If they really made Letterman legitimately laugh, that's probably another good barometer of whether someone is a comedian's comedian or not, because I don't think Letterman suffered fools.
No.
And if somebody was legit making him laugh, that was a very good sign. I know Patton Oswalt also told me about Norm Macdonald. Often when people kind of make it, they might get a little safer with their comedy, or they don't want to say things that are going to get them fired from Saturday Night Live, for example. And, Norm was kind of fearless in that way. He said, there was a quote here in the story. Norm Macdonald's the first one that comes to mind who was still doing things that made other comedians say, oh my God.
Right. Like, yeah.
They just couldn't believe that he went there. And that will endure a comedian to, his peers, for sure.
I think that's just one of the things that Letterman seemed to enjoy about their appearances. He loved the fact that Norm Macdonald just didn't care, or at least didn't seem to care. And I think Letterman respected that, or at least it seemed to be. And that's the thing I loved watching about their interplay on the air.
It's probably what they had in common, too. Yeah. I think, especially watch those early Letterman shows. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of an I don't care attitude about, like, I don't care if you get this or not. I think it's funny. Right. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring out, pets doing stupid tricks. I'm going to bring out Larry Bud Melman. They're not funny in the traditional way of funny, but they make me laugh. You can either come along for the ride or not.
Give us a couple of people. We're talking to Matt Solomon. He is from Cracked.com, a comedy beat writer and author as well, among his many talents. Give us a couple of examples, Matt, off this list of comedians that maybe our listeners might not have heard before, but you think it's worth a YouTube or whatever look at them.
There's a guy that Oswald told me about who's his name was Warren Thomas. And one thing that was kind of crazy about this guy was that he would literally just kind of make things up on stage. I mean, he would just go, I mean, he was a little bit of a Robin Williams type in that regard, in that he would just go up without necessarily a super plan, and he would just let her rip. And big influence on people like Robin Williams, mm-hmm. and people like that. He auditioned for Saturday Night Live, and Lorne Michaels notoriously, when even people that work for him, he notoriously keeps them waiting for a very long time. And when Warren Thomas went into audition, he waited for a while, and then after a couple hours, he said, "No, I don't need this," and he just walked. And and Chris Rock later said, he's like, they were ready to hire this guy, but that was just, he marched to his own drum. So, wow. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He's an interesting one to check out.
Absolutely. Anybody else, any other takeaways from this article on comedians, if I can say it, you can find it at cracked.com. Any other kind of overall takeaways or traits that these people seem to have in common?
I think, one thing that Andy Kindler was really big into was comedians that we touched on this a little bit, but comedians that would deconstruct the form.
Sure.
And by that, I mean, making fun of the act of doing comedy while doing comedy. He brought up Kevin Meaney to me, and Kevin Meaney was a pretty popular comic back in the 1980s, but he would do things like, if he was on stage and things weren't working, he would just launch into, I don't care if my jokes don't work, I don't care. And other comics loved him for that. And part of it was just the way that he, thumbed his nose at the act of doing stand-up while he was doing stand-up.
That's fantastic. I mean, it may not make you a lot of money, but you endear yourself to fellow comedians.
Well, that is the shadow side of being a comedian's. There are people on the list that, the other comedians. Well, Larry David was one of those people for a long time that the other comedians felt were brilliant, but it was so abrasive and so committed to doing things his own way that he didn't work for a long time. Or at least didn't have the huge success that he eventually found. But I'm sure there are other Larry Davids out there who don't find their way onto a Seinfeld or a Curb, even though they may be brilliantly talented.
But that's a great point, Matt, in that I think most people would say, correct me if I'm wrong, at least me, I'm going to say it, I think that Larry David is a more overall talented writer and creative guy than Jerry Seinfeld. But Jerry Seinfeld had the personality to sell it all and was more likable maybe to a lot of people than Larry. Would Larry David, in your opinion, have become who he is without Jerry Seinfeld?
My opinion is no, he would not have become who he was without Jerry Seinfeld. I think sometimes the, whether it's like Lennon and McCartney or, you got the sunnier personality with the darker personality, and sometimes that combination, that partnership just clicks. I think it, especially at that stage of his career, I think Larry David needed that likable persona to mesh with. And then I think, once the, you know, acerbic vinegar of Seinfeld kind of took hold in the culture. I think people were ready for Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I don't know if you put Curb Your Enthusiasm on in 1989 or whenever Seinfeld debuted. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it becomes what it became.
I agree with that. I just find that, what's your opinion? Do you think, I mean, maybe it's a bad question to ask, but do you think that Seinfeld is overall as creative and talented as Larry David?
I think it's a matter of taste, I guess.
Apples, oranges, maybe? I don't know.
To a certain degree, I would say Larry David is more my taste than Jerry Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. I think to the masses of America, I think Jerry Seinfeld has probably more of a broad appeal than Larry David. I don't know which one I think Larry David is more original. I think Jerry Seinfeld is a master craftsman at crafting jokes.
Well put. Don't go anywhere, Matt Solomon. On the other side, the 25 greatest rant comics of all time. This is the Todd Ball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 before the hour of 3 o'clock. Coming up at the top of the hour, network news, a little weather, and then our friend and colleague Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn Direct coming up immediately after the break. And then at 4 o'clock, Devil's Advocates, followed by Maggie Dawn, and later on, Rick Smith, Across America and Native Roots Radio. Right now, our guest this half hour, and we're pleased to have him, from Cracked.com and an author as well, Matt Solomon, talking a little bit about comedy here on different genres. Want to move over to this other story that you have at Cracked, Matt, entitled The 25 Greatest Rant Comics of All Time. For those that might not be familiar, give our listeners a little sample or explain what rant comics and comedy are.
Well, I had a Sherpa for this story, and that was the comedian Lewis Black, mm-hmm. who's also known as the King of Rant, who was also on The Daily Show for many, many years with Jon Stewart. And they would, I believe his segment was called Back in Black, where they would just toss to him and he would just go off on a venom-filled diatribe for, 3 or 4 minutes about whatever was irking him that day. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to him about, what is rant comedy, which he defined as a long diatribe fueled by anger in which the person doesn't take a breath.
I like that.
The thing that was, there was a couple of interesting things that he taught me about rant comedy. One was that it takes a lot more than just getting on stage and being angry to be funny. Mm-hmm. He said there was a lot that he had to learn about. If he just went up and spewed his anger at audiences, he could feel them tense up. He could feel them back away. And he needed to find ways to learn how to play anger in a way that it was funny to an audience, but it wasn't off-putting to an audience. And one of the ways that he would do that was he would assign as much vitriol to life's smallest irritations as he would to something like some political scandal. So then it kind of just became the joke that this is just a guy that anything sets him off, and it kind of diffused it a little bit so that the audiences could hear it.
You have a couple of people on this list that I was familiar with, many people may be familiar with. When I think of rant comedy, Sam Kinison for me is the guy, the late great Sam Kinison, who just went out and literally yelled into the microphone. Yep. And he had to have a certain taste to sit there and listen to a full set of that. The other one, Roseanne Barr, a little bit not quite as yelly, but just ranting. But you also have a guy like, I would not have put him on the list, Dennis Miller. When you said earlier in the last segment, acerbic, I don't know anyone who's more so than Dennis Miller. Explain the nuances between those comedians.
I think when you're talking about someone like Kinison, there's not a lot of nuance.
My guess between the two of them, or three of them, I guess.
Right, yeah. I mean, his whole act was literally screaming at audiences about whatever it was that was stuck in his craw that particular night. I don't think anyone had seen anything like Kinison.
Yeah.
When Kinison first showed up, you know, he had been a preacher at one point in his life, and I think he brought some of that fire and brimstone. That. Yeah. Wow. So he brought some of that fire and brimstone to the stage, but I mean, that was, you're right, a very different kind of rant than what Dennis Miller would do. Mm-hmm. You know, Dennis Miller, I don't know if you remember in the HBO show he had in the 90s, he had a whole segment built around to like, I don't want to go off on a rant here. And then he would go off on a rant.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
It became almost a kind of a cutesy little cottage industry for him. Mm. I mean, he wrote a bunch of books that were like, I think I rant, therefore I am, the rant zone, the rants. That's one of the reasons I included him on here. He made it such a part of his identity. But I think, you know, where I think going back to Lewis Black's definition, once he got going, that guy didn't take a breath when he would just go on and on. And, you know, his ranting was full of arcane academic references and, you know, weird know-it-all metaphors. But they were still, there were a more cerebral form of long-winded anger spewing that, really worked for him for a long time.
What was he on? He was on Monday Night Football for what, one or two seasons?
I think just the one. That
was enough. That was enough for ABC. I mean, whether it was Frank Gifford, Al Michaels, and Dennis Miller for a season. And I mean,
I think Dan Fouts was part of that.
Was he still there? Oh my gosh. But some of the lines that Miller would just have off the top of his head, and you could just tell the rest of the booth was like, what the heck is this guy talking about? It went completely over their heads. I mean, in my opinion, he's one of the most intelligent comedians out there.
Well, he certainly has one of the largest vocabularies and a large mental Rolodex of, like I said, arcane references that he can... You know,
to recall it, you know, just like that
metaphor, right? Exactly. I'm not sure that it always translates into being really funny, but there is a certain like high wire act that you're watching where you're just like, wow, that guy just goes and goes and goes, and you know, just the crazy variety. You know, he might, you know, throw some Aristotle in with a reference to the Love Boat. With a reference to a Barry White lyric or something that was part of it too. It's just the breadth of the references was just breathtaking.
A little over a minute left talking to Matt Solomon from Crack.com. Want to get your take, update on what's happening in the Writers Guild strike and Screen Actors strike. You're plugged into a lot of this across America. What's your sense? Any progress here, or are we still looking to next year before this is going to break?
I don't know if it's going to go into next year, but I don't think it's going to be resolved next week either. Everything that I'm seeing, people that I'm talking to are saying that both sides are digging their heels in and this is not getting resolved anytime soon, which makes life hard for people like me who want to write about this stuff. But, you know, there's not going to be a lot to write about as everyone puts this on pause.
You mean you're not interested in writing about the latest eviction in Big Brother?
I have talked to a couple of the contestants on Stars on Mars.
Oh, really? Oh,
man. That reality show. I talked to McLovin.
Oh, nice.
When he got kicked off, and comic Natasha Leggero when she got kicked off.
Now, if we can get Shatner on this show talking about that, that would be just the cat's meow.
That would be amazing.
You're amazing, Matt Solomon. You can find his work at crack.com. Matt, thanks for being gracious with your time. Matt Solomon, stay tuned. We have Matt Flynn on the other side of Matt Flynn Direct. Thank you to Mr. Aaron Zommers, also to Pat Kreitlow and Stuart Stevens, and for you for listening. Whatever you're believing in, whatever you're fighting for, keep banging your drum. We'll see you tomorrow on the Civic Media Radio Network.